The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Part-Time Genius, a production of Kaleidoscope and iHeartRadio.
Guess what, Will?
What's that, Mango?
So, you know how sometimes after it rains, you see snails on the ground?
Uh-huh.
And you know how sometimes you pick up those snails and collect that trail of clear, slimy stuff they leave behind and rub it all over your face as a moisturizer?
So we're like 15 seconds into this episode and you have already lost me. Is that actually a thing?
Yeah, well, I don't know about the DIY version of it, but there's definitely a whole industry around snail mucin. And in fact, snail slime might be our most valuable of the slimes. If you're going to put money in slime, it's probably the top slime to put money into right now. But some forecasters believe that the market for snail slime beauty products will actually top $770 million in the next year. And that's in the U.S. alone.
Wow, that's more than we brought in advertising for this podcast. Isn't that amazing? I can't believe we've been stepping over this primo slime for all these years.
I know, it's embarrassing. But from smearing it on our faces in the name of beauty to getting it dumped on our heads on kids' shows in the name of comedy, today's episode is all about trying to figure out why humans are so obsessed with slime. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to Part-Time Genius. I'm Will, and as always, I'm here with my good friend Mango. And somewhere back behind that big booth is our pal Dylan, who many of you know moonlights as a snail beauty influencer because of his beautiful dewy skin. We were just talking about it before we started recording.
I know. We get it, Dylan. Your skin is beautiful and glowing. You're better than us. Yeah, all of that.
Let's move on. I'm getting upset. But Mango, why are we talking about slime today again?
Well, in addition to complimenting Dylan, it's just like a weird topic. But you know, I live in Brooklyn, right? Mm-hmm. And we have this little fenced-in backyard. And for some reason, there's a hole in the fence. And it was there when we moved in. But it's great because our kids and the neighbor's kids use it to sneak over to each other's houses. So I'll throw my kids in the backyard and suddenly they're like three more kids playing in the backyard with them. And it's really sweet and kind of Americana to me. But we have this one little neighbor, Yuki, and when it rains, he comes over in his little raincoat and he just goes snail hunting in our flower beds. Yuki is just the best.
Oh, that's cute.
He even does this like little hand symbol for snails. I don't know. Have you ever seen this? Time he finds one, he does that. And so partly that, and then part of the fact that Ruby is just at an age where, like, kids are always playing with slime and mm-hmm. making slime at home because of, like, science or something.
Correct.
It's just around my house all the time, and I hate it. Like, I hate slime so much. So I wanted to do this episode to try to understand why slime exists and why some humans are so attracted to it.
Wait, I want to go back, though. Why do you hate slime so much?
I mean, it sounds fussy, but I don't like my hands being like wet and sticky.
Right.
I like putty, like silly putty I can get behind it. Yeah. You can bounce it. You can transfer images. It can erase stuff. But, you know, it's not slime.
Okay, so we're going to change. This episode is now about putty. But no, I'm actually glad we sorted that because you've done a lot of thinking about this. Maybe we should start with what slime is. Like what counts as slime?
Yeah, so slime is a pretty broad term. Even scientists will use the word slime without specifying exactly what it is, but mm-hmm. it's basically anything that's kind of soft and creepily fluid. So in nature, slimes act as one of three things. They can be a lubricant or a barrier, or they can be an adhesive. And one really common slime is egg white or albumin, which is a hydrogel. So egg whites are actually 90% water, and they provide protein and water for bird embryos and also cushioning inside the egg. But one of the most important things they do is that they act like a firewall against microbes. So it's actually this very sophisticated thing. And human embryos are protected by a very similar slime, amniotic fluid.
It's strange to think about, but yeah, I guess that's right. I mean, when kids are born, they're basically covered in egg white.
Yeah. I mean, for centuries, slime was especially associated with women because of pregnancy and childbirth. It's kind of that weird extension of those four humors and those old theories, mm-hmm. like blood and phlegm and bile. Plus, there's obviously all this ignorance about women's anatomy, but slime plays this weird role in our imagination because it's almost this boundary between health and sickness, right? Like on one hand, it can be this protective layer. And on the other hand, excessive pus or mucus, which are also slimes, signal disease to us. And in fact, I'm going to read you this little quote from a book by Suzanne Wedlich. It's called Slime, A Natural History. She says, humans are, quote, probably hardwired to find signs of their own mortality and animality disgusting and to shrink from contamination.
All right, so we're kind of hardwired to be grossed out by slime, but I feel like that's definitely changed some over the years, mm-hmm. and we now have a working definition of slime. So why don't we get back to that slimy gold you were talking about at the start? So this is snail mucin.
Yeah, so this is really cool, and probably the thing that makes me like snails so much more. The reason snails secrete slime is actually for movement. I always thought it was just like this disgusting evolutionary mistake, but mm-hmm. snail slime is also referred to as pedal mucus because snails use it to move. They're basically generating their own waves or surfing them in slow motion.
So snails are, they're basically like surfing their own snot.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I'm going to read you the exact quote from Wedlin's book because it's so fun. A series of contractions sends numerous little waves across their soles. Every elevation presses directly on the slime below, causing its molecular framework to break or shift if the pressure is strong enough. The snail foot then glides on the more fluid slime. Once the wave has passed, the pressure abates and the molecular framework recovers. The slime hardens again and the snail foot pushes away until the next surge.
Hmm. Okay, so that's why snails make their slime, but I'm still missing this leap of why people are scooping it up and putting it on their faces.
Well, snail mucin has actually been used in Asian beauty products for years, but it got super trendy in global skincare around 2017. Advocates say snail mucin hydrates the skin and reduces wrinkles, but you know, the science on that's kind of mixed. But whether or not it works, there's been a huge boom in the snail slime industry, or heliciculture, I guess it's called.
I wasn't familiar.
In Italy, there are more than 4,000 snail farms. And they've seen a 46% increase in snail slime in the last 10 months, all due to demand from the cosmetics industry.
I mean, I will say, I think when people hear cosmetics industry and they hear animals of any kind, we do get a little bit concerned for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, the industry doesn't have the best track record, but several companies say they've actually developed processes to extract the slime that doesn't injure the snails. So there's a South Korean company, it's called CauseRx, mm-hmm. and they say, quote, the snails are placed over a mesh in a dark and quiet room for about 30 minutes. The snails are left alone to freely roam the net, leaving mucin in their trails. There's no external process applied to the snails or the mesh to force mucin production.
I just had this great mental image when you said the snails are free to roam the net. I was picturing surfing the web.
And so, it's dark, so it's the darkness.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, so far slime is 3 for 3. It protects fetuses, you can surf it, and you can wear it on your face, which I know people are looking for things to put on their face. So one thing I'm kind of fascinated by recently is slimy foods, though.
So things like okra.
I love some good slimy okra. I actually really do. Yeah. But it's also things like natto, which is a Japanese fermented soybean that's delicious when you eat it with rice. And it's very gooey. And in fact, that gooey texture is kind of common in Japanese food. You find it in stuff like seaweed and mountain yam. And the Japanese have a word for it. It's neba neba, which translates to sticky or slimy. And it is supposed to be onomatopoeia for the noise your mouth makes while enjoying these slimy foods.
Neba neba, neba neba.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fun to say.
It's definitely fun to say. All right, well, you keep working on your nebas. Let's take a quick ad break.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Part-Time Genius, where we're talking slime. And I think it's time to veer into slime of pop culture, because of course, it's one of the most popular places where we encounter slime. You'll see these in TV and in movies. Of course, there's Ghostbusters with Slimer, that green floating slime ghost.
Who became such a fan favorite. I mostly remember him from Hi-C juice boxes.
Yeah, Slimer was such a big deal. When we were like top, it was like Michael Jordan, Slimer, Madonna, you know what I mean? It was just, Slimer was a big deal. And then there's the blob, which features, of course, a blob, this expanding mass of red gelatinous material, which just grows and it eats and it like pulls human victims into itself from all directions. And some of this imagery actually goes back to the 1930s. You've got writers like H.P. Lovecraft and Karel Čapek, and they actually wrote War with the Newts.
You know, I feel like I read a good bit in college and I'm not familiar with that literature. Well,
you need to do a little bit more reading, but it's about slimy newts that, quote, wage war on humanity and strive toward world domination. It's famous because it's basically this allegory. Like, what you find out is the newts were peaceful and kind until humans started abusing them.
Sure.
So Čapek, you know, was writing this in 1936 Czechoslovakia. So it's basically about fascism. So you saw that coming, right? It's clearly about that.
Yeah.
And of course, there's the slime from Nickelodeon, which we knew we had to get to at some point, which is actually kind of messed up when you hear the origin story. I did not know this origin story before.
I'm worried about this.
Yeah, but it's actually messed up in a fun way, I promise. So back in 1979, which, side note, the year you and I were both born, You Can't Do That on Television premiered in Canada, and it was such a big hit that Nickelodeon picked it up. But in a 2012 interview with Vulture, co-creator Jeffrey Darby explained that the slime was actually a total accident. I don't know if you remember this, but there was this funny dungeon set on the show. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I do. When cable and Nickelodeon came to our neighborhood in third grade, all the kids in our neighborhood were completely obsessed with that and Double Dare.
Oh, Double Dare for sure. Yeah. That was another show with slime. But back to You Can't Do That on Television, the set had a chain hanging down. And the whole day they were shooting, there was this running joke between producers where they'd say, whatever you do, kids, don't pull on the chain. So as bits go, eventually someone decided to commit and they went to the cafeteria, asked for all the day's plate scrappings. They collected these all in one bucket, and their plan was to dump it on a kid when he or she inevitably pulled the chain.
Because, you know, as we both know, when you tell a kid not to do something, he or she pretty much has to do
it. Of course.
So slime was originally just food scraps?
Well, they actually ran out of time to shoot the scene that day, and you can't go to overtime with kids, of course.
But you can dump food scraps on
Yeah, that seems to be fine. So they come back the next week to get the shot. But the prop guy's like, I didn't get a new bucket of food slop. I just have the old one from last week. And we all know what happens to a bucket of food slop if you leave it backstage for a week.
It turns into compost.
Yeah, I mean, it got all green and gooey and moldy. And I guess this is because it was the 80s and they actually dumped this gooey mold on a child. And it got such positive response from Nickelodeon that they wrote a show with nothing but slime in it. And that's how Nickelodeon's green slime was invented.
And I'm guessing they've changed that recipe over the years.
They did, just a little bit. Yeah, it's proprietary, so we don't know exactly what it is. But Darby says it's all edible and non-toxic, so that's good. But he also has this really insightful thing to say about the nature of sliming someone. So here's what he had to say. Slime is a leveler. It's violent, but it's not violence. It's safe. That's why it resonated with kids. You're pulling these people who are on pedestals down. Green slime was about trying to give this comeuppance to kids on TV so audiences at home wouldn't feel so jealous of them. And of course, plenty of adults started getting slimed too.
You know, that's something I actually hadn't thought of. Like, you get all the fun of dropping something on someone's head, Looney Tunes style,
yep.
But because it's slime, it's not an anvil and no one's getting hurt.
That's right.
It's kind of a great evolution for comedy.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of this one journalist and what he said about the prevalence of slime in more adult movies, especially in the 1980s. Also, it captures these feelings of uncertainty of the times. Like, I mean, honestly, even like fears of radioactive threats.
Yeah, slime is, I guess, pretty versatile in terms of what you place on it philosophically. Here's something that's kind of fun. Did you know mid-pandemic, HuffPo actually looked into claims that slime has mental health benefits?
No.
And it's something I've seen more and more, like this idea that we like slime because it's both distracting and calming. Anyway, HuffPo talked to Jack Turbin, who's a doctor and chief fellow in child and adolescent psychiatry at Stanford. And while he said he's not aware of any peer-reviewed studies looking at the impact of slime on mental health, things like slime and putty have interesting textures, which make it easier to capture our attention and draw ourselves into our senses, which can make it easier to take a moment away from our thoughts and anxieties about the past or future. And he's not the only one who thinks this. There's this author, Brittany Johnson, who's also a licensed mental health counselor, and she said, soothing sounds and soft textures have been known to be a great coping skill for people of all ages. Touching slime can actually trigger calming signals in your brain.
That is pretty interesting. So it feels like one minute you're catching Slimer in a ghost trap, and the next minute you're squeezing him like a therapy dog.
Yeah, like a wet, green, mucousy therapy dog.
Now, of course, slime has plenty of negative connotations, too. Like, we've talked a little bit about the health benefits in nature, our mental health, I guess, and possibly magically de-aging your skin like your Benjamin Button. But slime is still gross, and especially when you're talking about pink slime.
I'd actually forgotten about pink slime in food, right? So tell me what it is exactly.
So pink slime has an official name. It's called lean, finely trimmed beef, or LFTB. And in the 1990s, it was in a ton of pre-made beef patties in the U.S. And the term pink slime was actually coined by a microbiologist named Gerald Zernstein in 2002. But most of us became aware of pink slime from the 2008 documentary Food, Inc. You remember all the noise it made?
Yeah. I just remember thinking at the time it was so gross. It was on magazine covers and things
everywhere,
like that.
Everywhere. And it's not appetizing. I mean, pink slime got a lot of bad press for that. It was a 2009 New York Times expose, and it reported that BPI, the company who made LFTB, had been lowering the levels of ammonium hydroxide it used to treat it in response to complaints of the strong ammonia smell in meat. But the reduction of ammonium hydroxide caused several batches of burger destined for school lunches to test positive for E. coli and salmonella.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah, there's this 2012 ABC News report that ran about LFTB. BPI eventually sued ABC and its parent company, Disney, for defamation, but the damage was done by that point. So grocery chains said they would no longer carry pink slime. Sales plummeted from maybe 5 million pounds per week to less than 2 million pounds.
I mean, pink slime is legitimately disgusting.
Be careful, though, because we don't want to get sued. So don't say too much.
Yeah. I mean, pink slime is delicious.
Right.
I eat it on cereal. But I think we're allowed to safely say that sea snot is gross. Is that okay?
I don't know. I don't know what sea snot is. But yeah, sure. I agree.
Sea snot are these thick, slimy, gray-brown sheets known as marine mucilage, and they are made of dead and living organic material, but a lot of it is phytoplankton. And these microscopic algae usually help fill the ocean waters with oxygen, but when they're stressed, they can grow out of control and produce this sticky, mucus-like substance that can span miles. Hmm. In 2021, Turkey's Marmara Sea, it was actually overrun with sea snot, boosted by global warming and also from an overload of pollutants like wastewater and also pesticides.
Oh, goodness. So if sea snot could talk, it would probably say, stop dumping poison on me and I'll chill out a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny you say that because that's something we tend to do with slimes, right? Like we treat them like they're sentient.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like we've done this for a while. So back in 1973, a woman in Garland, Texas named Marie Harris, she found a mysterious slime oozing from the ground in her backyard. And she said it was reddish and foamy. It had this black mucus inside when it was punctured, and it also released this purple goo. So really, really gross. And eventually she hacks it in half with a garden hoe. But 2 days later, it's back and it's doubled in size.
What?
And over the course of a couple of weeks, it grew to 16 times its original size.
It definitely makes it sound like it's alive.
I know. And a Dallas paper called it, quote, the brooding and inscrutable organism. And it set off this minor media frenzy. And of course, rumors started to spread that it had come from outer space. And it turns out it was just a slime mold, which, you know, is gross, but soil-dwelling amoeba, these brainless single-celled organisms that you see growing on forest litter and decaying wood.
I mean, slime molds don't have brains, but they actually are kind of smart, Mango.
So how do you mean?
Well, like you said, they don't have a brain, but slime molds can make really strange and sophisticated shapes, including, add this to the list, a replica of the Tokyo subway system. I mean, that's pretty smart. They can make that. This is actually true. A group of researchers from the Hokkaido University in Japan placed Physarum polycephalum, say it with me now, Physarum polycephalum, in a petri dish scattered with oat flakes. And they sprinkled the food scraps in a pattern meant to replicate the locations of some of the most visited sites in Tokyo. So first, the slime mold size grew exponentially, and then it branched out. And then the size of the branches started to shrink, and it eventually recreated this complex interconnected network made of slimes that looks almost exactly like the Tokyo subway system. See? Super smart.
Which is cool, but it also sounds like you could just like mold slime molds to look like art or architecture.
Yeah, I mean, it's so easy to endow this inanimate growth with intention. Actually, the original The Blob movie from 1958 was probably inspired by slime molds, because it's fun to imagine that the slime is actually thinking, but that's just a movie. It's not like slime can actually become aware and kill people, so you can relax.
Well, actually, in 2016, there was a mass migration of snails that left a trail of slime on a German motorway, and it caused a car crash, or I guess a car surfing out of control.
Always comes back to the snails.
So there's one other thing about snail slime I want to say. Mm-hmm. Snails actually leave molecular messages for potential mating partners in their trails. So it's not only a wave, but it's like a Tinder for snails.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. All right. Well, we've got a few more facts to get to, but before that, let's take a quick break.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Part-Time Genius, where we're still talking slime, Mango. And you know who loves slime, Mango? Cool Youths.
Cool Youths. Is that what they call themselves?
I don't know. They don't talk to me. But Cool Youths do love slime. In 2017, everyone on the internet was trying to make their own slime. According to Google, the number one how-to question of the year was how to make slime. Slime is even part of the cool youth secret internet slang, Mango.
The more you say it, the cooler and younger you sound.
I know, cool youth. Because everyone was so obsessed with making slime, a ton of these slime tutorial videos popped up on YouTube. So now when someone uploads a bootleg of a popular movie, they'll put in a slime tutorial in the title to bury the bootleg in a sea of legit slime tutorial videos.
I mean, that's, I guess, pretty smart because YouTube's much less likely to find and take down those videos, right?
Yeah. So if you type like slime tutorial and, for instance, Mean Girls, you might get a bootleg of Mean Girls movie musical. Not that we're condoning bootlegs. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, of course we're not. But as far as slime's involvement, it's pretty incredible that people are so obsessed with it. And slime tutorials are so prevalent that it's a good hiding place for like illegal recordings of copyrighted movies.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, Mango, after all these impressive slime facts, I have one remaining question, and that is, what can't slime do?
Maybe that's a good cue for one of our old-fashioned fact-offs.
Let's do it. All right, why don't I kick this off? So, did you know that slime has actually been to space?
Mm-mm.
In 2020, Nickelodeon sent about 2 liters of slime to the International Space Station, where astronauts played with it to figure out how slime acts in weightless environments. That's actually so cool that they got to do this. According to Nickelodeon, scientists shot it out of a giant syringe, popped a giant slime balloon, and plopped it on the ground to see if it would break apart and create a mess or stay clung together, which is a super fun way to get kids interested in how materials react in these microgravity environments.
It's made me change my stance on slime.
I know.
Maybe we can play with it in space all they want. So here's a gross one. I'm not sure if you've ever seen a hagfish. Have you ever seen one?
I don't think so. I don't know.
They're these like eel-like creatures. They're a delicacy in some parts of the world. But one of the most amazing things about hagfish is the way that they create an enormous amount of slime. So this is according to the Atlantic science writer Ed Yong. Hagfish produce slime the way humans produce opinions, is what he said, which is a great line. But according to Yong, basically when they're scared or stressed, they release a teaspoon of gunk. And in a fraction of a second, when that mixes with water, it expands 10,000 times, and that single teaspoon can fill buckets.
Wow.
That goo can actually protect hagfish from sharks because it stops mm-hmm. them from being able to, like, breathe, I guess. Mm-hmm. But there's actually a photo of Yong's Atlantic piece when a truck full of hagfish overturned and they spilled on a road in South Korea. And there's a car that's just covered in gunk. It looks like if it's been like slimed and it can't move. It is so funny and so horrific. You have to see it.
I definitely have to see that. All right, here's another quick one. So toy slime first became a thing in the 1970s. And in 1976, Mattel released the first slime. It was called Slime. And it was sold in these little trash cans. I feel like it was sold in trash cans for years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like even when we were kids. And from there, it slowly got incorporated into other 1980s franchises from Masters of the Universe to, of course, Ghostbusters. But my favorite slime toy, which I first learned about doing through, you know, a little bit of research, saw it on Wikipedia. There's this board game called Slime Monster. And the rules are amazing. So let me just read you this directly from the box. All right. The slime monster has invaded the town. You've got to stop him. You must get from the high school to the armory, pick up a landmine and knock the slime monster over. But be careful that the slime monster doesn't knock you over with his slime. So basically you keep trying to move this super gross, weird monster around. So he's standing over another player and then you get to slime them. And if the slime knocks them over, they have to move back to the beginning. It actually makes no sense. So we just stop playing this game. But it was a funny description.
So here's a sweet one. It's about Slimy the Worm, Oscar the Grouch's pet from Sesame Street. So I've always seen Oscar the Grouch and known about Slimy, but this is the origin story. So apparently the first time Slimy met Oscar was on a rainy day when Oscar went to the park to see mud puddles. And he saw all these other worms playing in one place, but there was this one baby worm playing alone. And then Slimy climbed up onto Oscar's shoulder and falls asleep. And Oscar takes him back to his trash can and feeds him strawberry sodas. That is where the friendship was born, which is, you know, almost too sweet a story for Oscar the Grouch, but I really like it. But the funniest thing about the whole mythology is that Slimy actually has his own family. He's got parents named Dusty and Eartha, and a cousin named Squirmy, and also Rachel.
No, and Rachel makes perfect sense. All right, well, if you want any indication of just how big the DIY market is for slime, take a look at the growth of Elmer's glue. According to the Washington Post, the trend really kicked off in 2017, like we were talking about earlier, partially inspired by social media and YouTube, but also because of the varieties of slime you could make, from sequin slime to glitter slime to cloud slime. And so as Elmer's marketing director told the Washington Post, we shipped more glue in the month of July of 2017 than we shipped the entire year of 2016. It was a wild and crazy time.
That's insane considering like they supply glue to like every school in the country.
Yeah, everywhere. It's amazing.
So how about this one to close us out? If you want to make slime a career, why not consider becoming a slime tender at the Slumu Institute, a 12,000-foot slime museum in Manhattan? In addition to guiding kids through glow-in-the-dark slime caves, making their own slime at slime bars and slime waterfalls, you get to rev kids up by saying, when I say slime, you say time. Slime time.
That's pretty amazing. Wait, I have never heard of this place. It's in New York?
I have thought about taking Ruby and their friends to it, and it just feels like a nightmare.
Yeah, it really does. But when they say slime and you say time. That's just energizing. I think for that, I feel like you're going to win the fact off today, so congratulations.
I am so honored, and I think the cool youth are really going to love this.
Oh, the cool youths. You got to put the youths. S on the end. All right, well, that's it for this week's Part-Time Genius. We're so excited to be doing this show again. Thanks so much for listening.
Part-Time Genius is a production of Kaleidoscope and iHeartRadio. This show is hosted by Will Pearson and me, Mangesh Hatikler, and researched by our good pal, Mary Phillips Sandy. Today's episode was engineered and produced by the wonderful Dylan Fagan with support from Tyler Klang. The show is executive produced for iHeart by Katrina Norvell and Ali Perry, with social media support from Sasha Gay Trusty, Dara Potts, and Viney Shori. For more podcasts from Kaleidoscope and iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.